A presentation
of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News.
This is Dialogue Assassination with Research Specialist Mae Bressel. For KLRB, I'm Gloria Barron. Well, to start things off, Mae, let's review what we are doing on the programs.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Gloria. We pick up new listeners, I hope, every week, and some want us to restate the purpose of this show. And I think a lot of my listeners wonder, as I throw out these facts, where I'm getting this information. I don't give you each week where I get my information, so we'll go into that right now. The purpose of the show is to illustrate that there were political assassinations in the United States that I call under the category of conspiracy, that the chance that Lee Oswald walked in and killed John Kennedy was not the fact at all, like people would want to believe, or that Sirhan killed Robert Kennedy or James Ray killed Martin Luther King. And I would like to show every week a little bit of evidence in the hour that we have that indicates through my 8 years research that these were conspiracies and that they were planned by the same people for the same purposes, and the conspiracies continue to exist. When these men were buried, John Kennedy, Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, their bodies were laid to rest. The persons who had part of murdering them live. They're free today. They walk the streets. They make our foreign policy. They decide your economy, your lives, who goes to war, what countries we're friendly with, who we'll recognize, who we'll turn our back on, who we will aid. They'll make decisions right down the local level and the state level, whether you're going to be able to have legal abortions. They'll decide on death penalty. The persons who were involved in the political assassinations are not far away creatures with no names. They have names. They have positions. They move up into place. And for those of you who listened before, we name names. I don't want to scare you like a scare show. These people have names and identities. And the only way you can solve a problem is to face it and not ignore it. It's like somebody working in a laboratory and looking through a microscope and recognizing a particular disease like mononucleosis and going back to the family and explaining that you have this particular disease, and they say, no, I have a head cold, I'll be better tomorrow. And you say, the microscope and the diagnosis, the evidence is in the blood cells that you have mononucleosis or hepatitis. And this particular person says, I don't know what that instrument is. I don't know what you're talking about. You know what I mean? Right. They just don't have the capacity to visualize what you see through the magnifying glass. And in the case of political assassinations, I've spent 8 years doing research trying to find the disease in our country and give it a name and then come up with a diagnosis. And the second part of my concern is not only to show that there were political assassinations that were conspiracies, but that these murders affect today's news. And this is why every week we talk about things that are in the current news and try to link them to the past assassinations.
Right.
And the bulk of my material is taken from the sworn testimony of the commission members, the material, the information on the assassinations that I did in detail were first, to start with the John Kennedy murder, the commission hearings that were published by the government printing office. Now, since the death of Robert Kennedy and Martin Luther King, we don't have access to any of that information, which I'm going to go into in a few minutes. But by cross-filing the information on the John Kennedy assassination, you know how the information was gathered and how it was distorted. And then you know the clues to look for in the other murders. And even though we don't have access to the actual data, we have enough to know what happened, like the autopsy of Robert Kennedy was seen. And we know that the bullet was 1 inch from the back of the head, not in a position where Sirhan stood. So the material that's locked up, I will talk about in a few minutes. Now, when we talk about political assassinations, I didn't realize, Gloria, how many people still did not believe or do not believe that there was a conspiracy. And we went on the air in June, and I talk every week, and I bring up all these different subjects. And sometimes it's amazing for people to come and say, do you really think there was a conspiracy? Because I take it for granted from all my years of work, not just take it for granted, but I worked all these years. And I know there was because I have documents and evidence to point that out. So then I go on to share some of that, and you can't put it all together in 1 hour or 2 hours. So a lot of people get lost. And the problem of understanding these conspiracies is something which I call mind control. And the first book that I wanted to do on the political assassinations to set down to do was to study the subject of how do you get an entire nation to accept the Warren Report or accept the story that Oswald killed John Kennedy. How do you affect thinking people to accept the fact that there was this conspiracy? And there were four ways that this was accomplished, and I'll go into those briefly. The first way was the news control within 24 hours after the assassination of John Kennedy. When District Attorney Henry Wade and Chief of Police, the Captain of Homicide, Mr. Will Fritz, in Dallas, had a news conference Friday night in front of Lee Harvey Oswald and told the news media four things. They said, number one, they had the necessary evidence to convict Oswald. Number two, the case was closed. Number three, Oswald was a communist, a loner, a misfit. And number four, he was the only suspect. There was no conspiracy. He did it alone. Now, this was the night of the assassination. The citizens listened to the news, and it went over and over again. And the evidence they cited was that there were fingerprints on the rifle, that the rifle ownership was verified, the paraffin tests were positive. They had pictures of the suspect holding a rifle and a pistol, and that he had been to Russia and had a Russian wife. Now, I brought in the studio documents from the commission members, which we may read some of them next week. We may have time to go into later. There were no fingerprints on Lee Harvey Oswald's rifle. The ownership has never been properly verified. The paraffin tests were negative on his cheek that he could have shot a rifle. The picture of him holding a rifle is highly suspect to every kind of a test. He said his head was superimposed on that body, and I have the name of the person whose body it was on. This was done from years of research. But when the evidence came in of the errors in the first news media coverage, it never made the headlines again.
They're all just exactly opposite
of what they said.
Of what they had been told.
But when, yeah, after 8 years' research, or after 1 year's work, when the commission was finished, nobody made headlines by saying that Mr. Latona at the FBI went over that rifle he received within 24 hours in Washington, and he gave it every possible test, and he powdered it and photographed it, filmed it, and did everything that 35 years at the FBI had trained him to do, and found no fingerprints at all. And about a week after he had the rifle, a Lieutenant Day from the Dallas Police Force sent a letter to Mr. Latona with what he said was the palm print of Lee Oswald that was lifted off the rifle. It arrived 7 days later. Well, among my documents from the National Archives now is a letter as late as August of 1964, the commission asking J. Edgar Hoover, please get information on Lieutenant Day. How did he take that lift? Where did he get it? Who gave him the orders? Was this his usual duty? Who saw him do it? Why didn't he protect it with something when he sent it to Washington? Why didn't it show up? If Mr. Latona said the rifle had wood on it that wouldn't hold a print very well, it was hard to get fingerprints, how could Lieutenant Day get the palm print to stick? Well, the commission had a lot of questions that they asked as late as August, and the Warren Report was published in September, and not one of those questions was answered satisfactorily. But that didn't make the headlines. Now, the news control for the first 24 hours sets in your mind the image of what happened. Then, to carry that further, Lyndon Johnson appointed what he called a prestigious commission. And for all practical purposes, it would look like it was a prestigious commission. There was Alan Dulles, John J. McCloy, Gerald Ford, Richard Russell, Hale Boggs, and John Cooper. But when you analyze those people, Alan Dulles used to be chief of the CIA, and he's the man that John Kennedy removed from the CIA when he said there was a hidden government behind his back. Richard Russell is from the South. He is not very favorable to the civil rights positions. He's the gentleman who said, I don't ask what Georgia can do for my country. I want to know what my country can do for Georgia. And in Reader's Digest, he had a long article that Georgia supported entirely on warfare bases and ammunition factories and building warfare machinery. That he's proud that Georgia is able to serve its country by doing this kind of thing. Now, he's the lone watchdog, or one of the two or three that watches the CIA for the Senate. Hale Boggs and John Cooper were close friends of Lyndon Johnson. They read part of the wedding ceremony at their daughter's weddings. They've been lifelong friends. Gerald Ford and is a member of the Congress who is sympathetic with escalating the war, making a parking lot out of Vietnam, and such ideas. He was not in accord with pulling out of Vietnam at any time. John J. McCloy, head of the World Bank, and his law office was the conduit for Hans Tuft and CIA agents. He's worked with the largest economy blocks of the Eastern Seaboard. It was not a homogeneous group. There was not a pro-Kennedy person on the commission. They were similar in their opinions on civil rights, where Mr. Kennedy and his brother, President Kennedy, were not very popular. And they were not against the escalation of the war in any way. And therefore, I cannot say that this commission was pro-Kennedy or sympathetic to John Kennedy in any particular way. So to control your heads when the assassination took place, you had the news control for the first 48 hours, and within a week, you had a prestigious commission. Now, the third motive to control your mind was to discredit any person who criticized the commission when it was to come out. Your sanity was challenged, and I'll give you just three quick examples of that. One of them was Louis Neisser, in his introduction to the hardbound copy of the Warren Report, said, critics are like scavengers who swoop down on tragedy and they feed until their stomachs burst with publicity. They create a brew of mystery and inflammatory conjecture as fantastic as the crime itself. Harrison Salzberg of the New York Times, Salisbury, wrote an introduction to the paperback edition of the Warren Report. He said the critics of the Warren Report are self-serving. Their objective is to undermine the standing of the United States and its governmental structure. They aim at sowing mistrust and confusion at home. They are men skilled, able, hampered neither by scruple nor principle, ready to convert the national mood to selfish and particular ends, end quote. Now, remember, this was before anybody had read the Warren Report, Gloria. This was when the Warren Report was coming out. That this was the introduction to the book, that anyone who questioned it would be undermining the United States.
Sort of sets the tone, doesn't it?
It sets the tone. Yeah, oh, I could read about 40 examples of people being really sick or misfits. Now, if you want a local version of the truth about the assassination, there's a book called The Truth About the Assassination by Charles Roberts. It's an answer to the Warren Report critics, and we could do 20 continuous weeks on taking his arguments and showing where they're false. But Thrifty Drugstore on the peninsula here has a table where you can buy for 20 cents this book now. It's flooded. Everybody tells me Thrifty has the book on the answer to the critics. And in there, Charles Roberts begins by saying there's three kinds of people who would attack the Warren Report. Number one, the scholarly people, who had good intentions but ignored the testimony. Two, the desire for notoriety and money. And three, clearly psychotic. Okay. Now, the Warren Report came out, and they had a big problem. This is to convince everybody that there was no conspiracy. Even in their own minds, the commissions were sending memos back and forth, May, June, July, on this particular thing. But it was to be published in September. And a letter went out from the commission from Mr. Goldberg, the historian, to Lee Rankin, dated, this is May the 4th. And it said, events subsequent to the assassination are concerned chiefly with the public reaction in the United States and abroad. And he says, it was this public reaction, which disturbed, confused, suspicious, uncertain of the truth, that apparently helped decide President Johnson to appoint the commission. It is the same public reaction that has greatly influenced the commission's approach to his work. The main body of the report should include a section on public reaction to President Kennedy's assassinations, with particular reference to suspicions, allegations, rumors, and theories that have persisted. And we should this should be done briefly by reference to the basic facts developed. These public fears and rumors should be dispelled positively by considering and disposing of them rather than negatively ignoring them. They are part of the historical context of the event, just as a century of myth-making since Lincoln's assassination. Failure of the commission to destroy these myths while they are still in their infancy may permit them to persist as long as they have the Lincoln myths. Now, this is Alfred Goldberg, historian for the Warren Report. There was a failure to dispel these myths because anybody picking up the book and comparing it to this testimony and the documents could kindle forever the story that there was a conspiracy because the evidence just isn't there, that they tried to line it up, and they backed up with a lot of probabilities. I brought in, Gloria, a letter dated May the 14th. This is from the National Archives by Robert Green from Voice of America. There were two organizations, Voice of America and the United States Information Agency, both lay closely aligned with the CIA and this hidden government. We know the role they take in the United States. And they are to go over there all over the world, and also in this country, they influence the minds. And the third method of making you believe that there was a conspiracy, in addition to the early coverage and the commission being prestigious, was to control your heads about the information you were about to receive. So in May of 1964, the Voice of America wrote a letter to the commission giving its suggestions on how to control the heads when the Warren Report came out. And this is the way it reads. When the report is issued, its reception will depend upon two factors: the substance of the report itself and the credibility accorded to the commission. And the degree of credibility must directly determine the influence of the report. In other words, end quote, 1 minute, the report isn't going to stand alone, the substance. The credibility is going to determine the influence of the report. The letter goes on. Since the foreign and some domestic press have questioned this credibility, and since the public effect of the report is, in a true mathematical sense, a function of its credibility, I would offer the following. The public, at this moment, is an unfocused audience with regard to the commission. Let me get off the quote a minute to say that the American people had no opinion one way or the other. They were waiting for the document to come in. And they had no way. They felt there were discrepancies in the evidence, the rifle and so forth, coming out in the news media. But they didn't have a firm opinion, so they're waiting. So what Mr. Green is saying is the public is an unfocused, he calls it an unfocused, audience with regard to the commission. But when the commission speaks for the first time, world attention will suddenly focus upon it. And whatever the commission says at that point will be important news and will command wide coverage. Every detail becomes feature editorial. The sudden focusing of audience attention can be used to advantage. I suggest that a preface to that report be issued some days in advance, since the effect of the report is a function of its credibility. This preface to be concerned with credibility, thereby serving a dual function, focusing world attention, at the same time reinforcing credibility. I have to end the quote for a few laughs, because when we talk about a credibility gap with Lyndon Johnson, I mean, this is to get your face on the screen. They were going to have television, you know, rehashing the Warren thing report and confirming that Oswald's assassin the day the report came out. But the whole thing is to get your mind on the report and focus the world attention and reinforce your credibility. The content of the preface and the imminence of the report shouldn't deal with the findings of the commission, he says, but with the procedures the commission uses, like the number of witnesses, their thorough search for detail, and the reality which you verbalized to me. It wasn't put into writing. The advantage of this procedure, it seems to me, is that the credibility of the commission is the big story. Credibility, which is the source of speculation, is handled head-on at the outset. It is given maximum publicity because it is the first utterance of the commission. And such a preface will focus the audience and may well lay down the tone the press is going to take for what is to come. Now, your choices, he says, before the commission are limited. Number one, you can issue your report without any advance preface. Or, B, ignore the attack on the credibility of the report if they are made after the report is once issued. And C, reinforce the credibility of the commission after the issuance of the report. And this is what, and I have to end the quote here, this is what the Warren Commission and the people in Washington did afterwards, Lyndon Johnson, and this is what Richard Nixon did after the death of Robert Kennedy with all the suits coming in and the discrepancies in the evidence. In the John Kennedy murder, they issued the report, but they gave the advance preface. They ignore the tax on the credibility, and they reaffirm the credibility of the commission. You wouldn't go against this Chief Justice and this prestigious commission. And then they said, the fourth suggestion was, use the preface approach and give it high publicity as the commission's first utterance. Now, that is from Voice of America. United States Information Agency had some more suggestions. This is in July 13th. They were to get in all the people from the newsmen from 65 countries, 50 newsmen from 65 countries, and they would get a briefing at their center in New York City. And they would be effective. They would have another briefing in Washington. And a representative of the commission should be available when the Warren Report is released. And they want wide publicity abroad. And Mr. Rankin is to send people abroad, John J. McCloy and Alan Dulles are to go to abroad, too, and push the Warren Report. July 20th, 1964, U.S. Information Agency wrote to Mr. Rankin, first, set the guidance materials to enable our television service to go ahead on realistic planning of our proposed documentary, and it will be seen by only three individuals, senior officers of this agency, top secret, the director of our television service, the production chief, the policy chief. No other officers will be here. They're to make a movie showing how good the Warren Report is. No one else will have access to this guidance except on a need-to-know basis with your concurrence. He said, remember how we talked
there's
about...
There's need-to-know again.
There's need. Remember we said on the CIA, this is going to be a movie to send all over the world to 65 countries, and it's to confirm the Warren Report. But it's a top-secret meeting. It's a very prestigious commission that's worked all these months with, you know, 552 witnesses and 36,000 exhibits. But how they're going to sell the Warren Report is going to be top secret for U.S. Information Agency. Now, he goes on in the letter. This is Carl T. Rowan, director for United States Information Agency. I also hope the Chief Justice will find it possible to hold a press conference. In my judgment, the benefit of a press conference will be tremendous, since to refuse the press, meet the press, will lend support to allegations that the truth has been shoved under the rug and is being kept there. So as far as this agency's responsibility is concerned, a wide open press conference would immensely strengthen the prospect of gaining a respectful reception of the report abroad. There was as much time spent on how to make the report acceptable as there was in just bringing up the problems in the report. They really, none of them were solved in trying to handle this murder. There's another letter here from September 30th. This is just before the Warren Report came out, from Alfred Goldberg, the same historian, to Lee J. Rankin, who was the head attorney for the Warren Commission. And he was wondering, the Department of State inquired about the visit to Europe of Mr. McCloy, John J. McCloy, and Alan Dulles. The embassy in Paris is apparently confused by what seems to be an overlapping visit for the same purpose. They're both going off to Europe and tell you how good the Warren Report is. Now, what happens when the pressure is put out and movies are sent to all these countries and U.S. Information Services will give to the American movie companies and the television screen and all over the world? Here are the headlines. I went to my study where I've kept news articles since 1963, Gloria, since November 63. And I'm going to read you about 20 headlines, various headlines that came out in 3 days following the assassination. On September the 28th, These are the headlines from I have papers from all over the country, but this is the way some of them read. London Press acclaims report. The next one is the work of one unhappy man. Nothing withheld from the Warren Report. Warren Commission report. L.A. Times editorial said only the sick irrational could take issue. Bob Considine had a large article, great document. There was another one that was ghastly. Oswald had wanted to kill since the age of 15. This didn't show up anywhere in the Warren Report at all. Not a thread of truth to this. And we'll read, you know, other times. In the Marines, he wrote in his score. He had, at the rifle range, the group that he was in didn't do any shooting because they were in the secret, he had top secret clearance in radar. And Lee Harvey Oswald wrote in his score because he only had to shoot once a year. If he was in the Marines three times, he wrote in his own score, and he had absolutely no interest in weapons and was never seen with a weapon ever in his life. So this is, he wanted to kill since the age of 50. Another one said, no basis for questioning the Warren Commission. That's from the great liberal, Walter Lippmann. Another one, Oswald's hunger for attention, life of discontent. September 30th headlines, Warren Report accepted, European press reaction, London, Paris, Denmark accepted. Warren Report dispels the rumors, that's an editorial in San Francisco Chronicle. Ruby alone in Oswald's slang, as Oswald's slang. Oswald wasn't a foreign agent, there's another one. Warren verdict, Oswald alone. All that is known, told by the Warren Commission. Live magazine, October the 2nd, has a cover with a conclusion. And it's got four inside the pages. If you look up October 2nd issue, 1964, they have four top leads on four successive pages, which read, one rival, one rifleman. Another one, mother's myth, Oswald, a paid U.S. agent. Another one, nailing rumors of a conspiracy. And then they have a large picture of the commission sitting at a table, a prestigious commission, are all photographed in life. Time magazine has a cover, October the 2nd, with a picture of Oswald and the title, No Conspiracy, Domestic or Foreign. Los Angeles Times book review by Robert Kirsch says the Warren Report is a masterpiece. Now, I read you just a few of the headlines among my collection, and this is the way it runs, that all the rumors you see are put down. The whole emphasis was not on showing where the gun was purchased or any of the actual evidence in the murder. The whole emphasis is the rumors are put down. The orders that I have from their letters in May, June, July, and August on how they're going to handle it. This is the way it was handled. See,
why would they go to so much trouble, I wonder, May, if make this acceptable if they didn't have some grave doubts about its credibility?
Well, that's the point. If they didn't have grave doubts about their credibility, they wouldn't have to go into that at all. Maybe in the second half of the show, I should read some. I brought in some documents, which we may or may not have time for. Maybe for the second half of the show, I'll just read those.
May brought in a box that is a huge box full of documents we couldn't even start to cover.
Well, we were
everything
going,
that you brought.
I was going to talk the first half hour on why do people have such a block to accepting the fact of a conspiracy, and I do hope that as time goes on, I can open up people's minds if they listen every week and make a point or really try to, and make a note when the show is over, write down the hour and put on your icebox, it's the dinner hour, and try to remember each week, because you can't get it in 1 hour. And I don't want you to agree with me. I've said this before. I don't want you to agree with me. But you don't have a right to disagree unless you follow it for a few weeks, because you can't get 8 years' work into one hour. But the people who've been playing the tapes over for 20 weeks, they can see a thing much more clearly, you know, and invite friends in and listen to some of the tapes. It's easier.
I'll take a moment. You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Bressel. This is KLRB Carmel.